from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Welcome back in. We have made it to the second hour of Friday. I did not know if I would make it through this week without Kyle, but...
Where is Kyle?
I'm still standing. Kyle is in Kauai.
Oh.
Yeah, he had a trip set for Maui, and then the fires happened.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get to a point where, you know, you have plane tickets, and they're not going to be around forever, and you got to use them. And so, yeah, he's enjoying himself. Although... he'll be back. He'll be back in time, I think, to go to the NFC Championship game where the San Francisco 49ers will take on the Detroit Lions this weekend in Santa Clara. Sean, you're going to be there, right?
I'll be there. It's going to be my third straight NFC Championship.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've never
Maybe
been to
I'm
an
the
NFC
problem.
Championship. Maybe you are the problem.
But
it's not them. It's you.
No, it could be me. and just Kyle. I mean, like, that just makes sense. The guy rocks a Hawaiian shirt like nobody's business. So I like the fact that he's enjoying himself and getting that R&R.
He does look like a guy who, like, can just, like, hang out and at a beach at any time.
Hudson.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Good for him.
Yeah, so he's hanging out. He'll be back on Monday. Excited to have him back in. But it's great because we get to mix it up a little bit. We had Jerry here on Tuesday, and Jerry's just still phenomenal. Like, it's just so good.
Any Bill Russell stories? He had to have. Anytime I see him, I always want him to share Bill Russell stories.
He actually brought up Bill Russell in a story, which was kind of weird. But Bill Russell had brought in some player that Jerry had to cut because we were talking about, like, you know, what it's like to go through the NBA trade and have this buildup and all this uncomfortability and, like, how do you talk to players and stuff? And he said, yeah, one of the toughest things was that Bill Russell had done John Thompson a favor and brought in some guy that just wasn't good enough to play in the NBA, and he was on their team, and they needed the roster actually to sign anyone
else. I remember this. I remember the play. I wish I could remember the play.
Yeah, and so once he took over for Bill, then he actually just, like, had to pull the plug, which was because he knew that that player would not play again in the league. And, you know, I think, you know, I go back to the crazy story that Paul Westfall told me about the guy they had on their bench who had had his cousin kill his pregnant girlfriend. But he had to, they had to eventually, like, got to a point where they had to make cuts, and he cut Kurt Rambis and ended Kurt Rambis's basketball career and had a guy on the bench that had literally had someone killed, and just a really, really weird and bad situation. So I don't think it ever feels good. And I will even say, like, a couple of years ago, there were rumors that the Kings were going to waive Alex Len after the trade deadline. Actually, I think it might have even been last season that they might have been, I think it was a year before, like, where they said, hey, it's possible that, like, we get to the end of the trade deadline, and once we get past it, you know, Alex Len could get waived. And then they don't, and then Alex ends up being a valuable member of the team in the second half of the season, and then they bring him back again and again. And for me, it's one of those things where it's always the hard part, because there was a chance there that Alex Len could have been out of the league, And then he earned his way back in, and he showed that he was still valuable. And now he's another 2 years, and you know those 2 years matter, man. You know, NBA players get I think it's $800 a month for every year that they play in their retirement. So once you retire, and I think once you retire and then you hit 50, if you play 8 years, you get $8,000 a month. If you play 12 years, you get $9,600 a month. So it's like, it does help every single one of these years. It pays down the road, and you know, like that all of that matters for these guys.
Pensions are nice.
Pensions are nice. Like, where are our pensions at? Yeah. Let's get to the Snyder's talk though. Debo practiced yesterday.
Yeah.
There's a chance he plays. I think there's also a chance that that he doesn't last long, just because, or that you use him sparingly because it's a shoulder injury and it's just he gets hit the wrong way one time and you know it's gonna hurt. What are your thoughts? Like, how much different are the Niners without Debo?
Oh, night and day. I mean, it's just, yeah. Look, they have talent everywhere, but without Debo, I mean, it's not only just another weapon, but it allows them to completely spread the field, especially with him when they use him in the backfield as running back. I mean, it's incredible. It just gives them a whole nother array of weaponry in their arsenal, and he's definitely going to play. He is definitely going to play. Mm. Will he be Debo Samuel that we all know and love? No, probably not. But they're going to have him out. He's going to give it a go. Debo is not going to sit that game out. The shoulder's not fractured, which is a huge, huge relief. And, I mean, they put him on a blue jersey, make sure no one touches him, pack him in ice, and you let him go. He's not it. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have kind of had that mentality going into the last game against the Packers. Eric Armstead, one of them, you know, a guy who was – you know, probably should have sat out. I mean, he wasn't great in that game, had a penalty against him, but look what they're able to do against the run. And you going up against a Lions team that is really good against, you know, not only really good defensively against the run, but obviously really good as a running threat as well. So, but Debo Samuel out there, they're going to need him, especially when you're able to, what's the weakness on the Lions? Attacking their defensive backfield. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Is that the biggest fear you have with the Lions, is that they have, you know, David Montgomery rush for over 1,000 yards and 13 touchdowns, and then they have Jahmyr Gibbs 945 and 10 touchdowns and then another 300 yards receiving? Like, they really have some elite talent at the running back position.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gibbs too. I mean, just incredible. Yeah. They're so much similar to the Niners offensively that, like, they're Spider-Man's pointing at each other, you know. But I like the way the Niners defend the run. I like the way, you know, the Niners also have questions in their defensive backfield as well. But the way that defense is capable of giving the Lions something they haven't seen in a long, long time, especially on a stage that they haven't been to in even longer of a time, I like the Niners' chances in that. Now, I will say, look, the Lions were the one team I was like, if I'm a Niners fan, I don't want to see the Lions at all.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the fear of a team that, I mean, it's kind of funny. I don't know if you saw Dan Campbell come out into his press conference. He's looking around going, oh, look at all this media. Like, we're not used to this.
No.
It's like, it's the NFC Championship, dude. Like,
yeah.
If you think this is bad, what do you think 2 weeks from now looks like?
Yeah. I mean,
going to the franchise's first Super Bowl. So I get look, it's an honest assessment. It's probably a little tongue in cheek. Like, oh, you guys cover everybody else, but not us up here in Detroit. Sure, but this is the stage, and yeah. And sometimes playing in a stage like that, knowing you maybe shouldn't be there or not have that familiarity like the Niners do, clearly third straight NFC Championship, 4 championship appearances in 5 seasons. I think you're gonna lean on the experienced team on their home field in really kind of favorable conditions.
Yeah,
and again, I love the fact the Niners got that scare. I really do. Like, it brought, like, I was saying something about the Packers game where it's like, people say it's good to be lucky, better lucky than good. And I thought they were both, because yes, you were able to hold on to your season, but you did it in a way where it's like, no, you went and got it. There was no luck there. You know, they pried out of them. I mean, they were facing elimination, backs against the wall mentality, and they were able to do it. So, against a team that was really look, the Packers, fact of the matter is, Packers have been playing in playoff games for the past month, really. And the Niners, you get a chance to rest up and you get a little bit of that rust and you think like you should be there. Mm-hmm. No, I like the pucker factor. Go out there and it's like, oh, we're looking at the end of our season right now. And Trent Williams having that passionate message to their offensive line, to that group, because they all know what next year looks like. Super Bowl or not, this team's going to look a lot different.
Mm-hmm. So. No, I think it's interesting, too. I like you say, the whole Spider-Man, like there are two teams that look very similar. And I would say the biggest difference, if we're really going to, there's two main differences. It's number one, it's Debo. They don't have a Debo. They do have two running backs as opposed to McCaffrey, just one guy. But you could make the claim that, you know, McCaffrey's better than both.
They do have an elite receiver, though.
No, I know, but yeah. I'm going to say that there's not that much difference between him and Ayuk. It's just the fact that Ayuk has all of these other weapons, too, and doesn't get as many touches. I think the one thing that separates the two teams outside of Debo, not having a Debo-type player, is the linebacking core of the Niners is just absolutely spectacular. Yeah. So if you can keep Hutchinson off of Purdy, like, that's, you know, I don't know if you can, but if you can, then I think he gets comfortable and this, it's not even close. But I think the biggest thing for the Niners is that they have these two linebackers that just make such a huge difference. And they're so elite, especially against a run, you know, and I mean, against the pass as well. You know, they really do take a lot of the middle away, and I don't know. I'm intrigued. We'll get to predictions later, but, yeah, I think this is going to be a really good game.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I've kind of felt like, I've always felt like, I think it will go one way or the other. I think one team will fold up.
Well, of course it's going to go one way or the
other. No. I mean, it'll be like a 20-point win one way or the other, 14-20-point win one way.
Oh, you think it's going to be a blowout?
Yeah, I do. I think that one
team
won't show up.
Win.
Yeah, I think one team will show up and one team won't. And I'm not sure that you know, you would think, well, that would mean the 49ers are going to win. But I'm not always sure about that, because this team does have moments where you're like, okay, where are you at? What's happening here? Where, you know, how are you going to show up? How are you going to change the tenor of the game? And I'm just not sure that, you know, that this team has the ability to recover from taking a couple of shots to the face. Hmm. So we'll have to see.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to do the good, bad, and the ugly from the Sacramento Kings win over the Golden State Warriors. There were a lot of interesting things in this game that we can sit here and digest. So we're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll see you in just a minute.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, back to the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back in to the Insiders.
What's the last concert you went to?
Gaga.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you did. Oh, that's right. You did do that.
Well, yeah. But Ed Sheeran tickets, we had Ed Sheeran and Gaga back to back, and Ed Sheeran canceled the show while we were having a way too expensive Mexican food dinner across the street from the arena.
Was that the Vegas one?
Yeah, the Vegas one.
So you went, right?
Well, no, they canceled it. I saw Gaga in Vegas.
Yeah. So did she do the piano show or did she do the other one?
She did the cabaret show.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was really cool. I mean, her voice is absolutely...
Yeah, she's great.
Amazing. I also thought it was really, really, really produced. And so, like, I would prefer, like, an authentic show. And I guess maybe that's why you don't go see shows in Vegas.
Yeah.
Where they're...
It's not that you don't, but you have to understand that, like, they want you back in the casino very quickly. They don't want you... So a lot of the shows end up being, like, a hard hour and a half.
Yeah, it was probably a little bit longer than that, but at the same time, I was okay with it. It got a little old,
really?
I think. Okay. Yeah, that was just me. Like, I don't.
Next time, check her out the arena. The arena, like an arena show, is.
Oh yeah, unreal. See, I would totally do that. Yeah, I mean, even like you know, we've seen so many shows at Golden One, and you know, I had never been to a show like Timberlake, right?
Oh, he's going on tour.
I had never really wanted to show like Timberlake,
how
like
dare you.
Like a pop show. Like it's not my sort of music.
It's hurt my feelings.
Yeah, there you go. But like, I wanted to know what his pedometer said afterwards. Like, how many steps did you take? Because I thought he probably covered like a marathon by the, like 26.4 or whatever it is. Like,
okay.
He was going all over the stage and like. He made so many laps, and I thought, oh, wow, this is crazy. I had just never been to that type of show where he's not sitting there with, like, an instrument or anything else. Like, the dude was making laps. Although, like, even...
Welcome. You appreciated it.
Yeah, it was okay. Different than, like, Maroon 5. I thought Maroon 5, they do some of that, but it wasn't nearly as much. Yeah, I just thought, wow, that dude is in great shape. He's doing a lot of walking out there. A lot of walking, a lot of running.
There's a campfire on stage.
Yeah, there was a campfire on stage. That's very true. Let's get to the good, bad, the bad, and the ugly. I think, you know, to sort of circle the good, what we're seeing from Harrison Barnes is just, like, spectacular over the last couple of games. Is it sustainable, Sean? Like, no, I mean, like, not that 30 points a game, but is it him being a forceful part of the offense and being that not just a fifth option, but an option? Is that sustainable?
It's up to two people because it is sustainable.
Okay.
But it's up to Mike Brown and it's up to Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes has to, first off, show the ability that he wants to do that and be that guy. He has to not just be the good teammate and make the extra pass and try to set up the other people that are higher ranked in the offensive flow.
Mm-hmm.
He has to want to be forceful. He has to want to do it. And okay. I think Mike Brown, it's up to him to pull that out of Harrison, pull that out of his teammates to continue to say, Harrison, you are one of our best options, not only getting to the bucket, but also getting to the free throw line. As long as it doesn't disrupt what they're trying to do offensively, absolutely. It's sustainable. 30 points, no. Like, that's not happening every night. But him being impactful offensively in a scoring role, sure. But he has to want to do that.
No, I totally agree. And I think a lot of this is Harrison being too kind of a teammate and not actually like stepping up because I always go back to the Kawhi Leonard thing. Like Kawhi Leonard, like he didn't want to shoot when he was young.
Right.
And Greg Popovich pulled him aside and said, look, man, we're not trying to make you score so you can score points and you like put it on the resume or make an all-star team or whatever. We're not doing it for that purpose. We're doing it for the specific reason that it makes us a better team. When you score, when you shoot, we are a better team. And I think that's something that Harrison needs to hear.
It's wild because you're talking about a Kawhi Leonard who was probably, what, 20 years old at the time?
Yeah.
Compared to Harrison who's, what, damn near 30?
Yeah. So, well, no, he's 31. 31.
Yeah.
That's
wild.
Yeah, for me, it's, again, he's shooting 48.3% from the field. His shooting percentage right now is the second highest of his career. He's shooting 41% from three. It's the highest three-point percentage in his career. The fact is, he's just not taking enough shots. And on top of that, like, his usage is so low. And so all of his other numbers are down. His assist percentage, his assist numbers, all those things are going to be like super low. But it's not, it translates to like per 36 stats. Like, he's just not doing enough. And I think that this is not only like a wake up call for the rest of the team to say, hey, look, like, we probably should involve him more, but also for Harrison to be more assertive. And if this is something different, if this is the Kings' way of saying, hey, look, other 29 teams, he's still really good. We just don't use him in that way. And we need, you know, again, to go back to a comment earlier in the chat, we need the player that can shoot the three but play defense at an elite level. We don't need a guy who's more of a well-rounded player in order for us to take the next step. And that's okay. Like, it's okay for Harrison Barnes not to be here if that's the way it works out, as long as the Kings are making strides to get better. But you don't just make a move to make a move, because he's showing you right now that he is actually a better player than you probably thought he was.
Well, I didn't have on my Ouija board or bingo card or whatever you want to call it, like, 44 shots in the past two games.
No.
That's
not after he took two. Right. Or he's averaged like seven a game or whatever it is for the season.
It was a mental and I reset over those 3 days where they had time to work on some things. And I think this is in the last hour, I think this was an absolute tactic that they wanted to go to. It was part of their strategy. How do you pull more impact and more aggression out of Harrison Barnes? And this might be like when you've got a pool full of algae and you got to shock the pool. This might be a little bit of a shock, and it comes back to more center a little bit. Certainly, you're not going to see Harrison Barnes continue to put up 20 shots a night, but, you know, getting him more in the offensive flow, I think, was the goal all along.
Yeah, I think so too. Before the last two games, he's averaging 7.6 field goal attempts per game. He's up to 8.2 after those two games. And again, I would just keep pointing, like, advanced statistics just show you, they're kind of a roadmap to tell you that he's just not being used. His usage this season is 14.4. And that's, again, after the last two games. I think it was well below that. It was probably more like 12.5 or something. He's just not being a functional part of what they're doing. And I mean, sometimes that's okay and sometimes it's not. But for this team to take the next step, they need some sort of stability from that position. Let's get to the next good thing, which was De'Aaron Fox looked like Fox. Smiles back. He talked a little trash. He talked trash in postgame. He talked trash to someone behind the Warriors bench at one point.
Pointed right at him.
Yeah, I don't know who that was.
I don't either.
But like, there was some,
probably a fan.
Yeah, there was some like talk there, and I think that that's a good thing. What do you make of him doing that in front of Grant Hill, who called the game, who runs Team USA, and of course Steve Kerr is the head coach of Team USA?
Well, I don't think he needed that moment to necessarily change their mind, but I mean, they know that. First of all, De'Aaron Fox was in the mix for FIBA years ago, mm-hmm. and when he had an opportunity that came kind of out of nowhere and unexpectedly to where he could have made that final national team roster, he dipped. And Jerry Colangelo, who used to put that team together, took that very, very personally.
Yes.
If anyone remembers, look, you've seen Harrison Barnes on Olympic teams. He stayed around for a very, very long time. The whole reason DeMarcus Cousins made his way to the Olympic team and made his way through FIBA and was rewarded was they reward loyalty. It's a new age in USA basketball now. I never thought this was going to happen again. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I did. Even with Jerry Colangelo not being a part of USA basketball anymore, I thought De'Aaron Fox had kind of made his bed and was at peace with it. And even when you talk to him, it's not like he's the most go out of his way to say how much it means to him to be a part of the USA family and be a part of that, until we talked to him on Tuesday or Wednesday, excuse me, they were off Tuesday. He had a much more different approach to talking about USA basketball and being a part of the 41 player pool that will ultimately be whittled down to the 12 member team on the national team. So I don't know that he necessarily needed a moment like that in front of the likes of Grant Hill, Steve Kerr, because certainly these guys have talked to him over the years. They know, I mean, Steve Kerr has had a front row seat to far too many games that De'Aaron Fox has been really incredible in. So I think I don't know that it mattered that much, but I will say you can see the evolution of Fox. And if you, he's still incredibly fast. His defense is now much more improved. He keeps his foot on the gas. And it'll be interesting to see getting him back into a USA basketball camp to see what type of role he plays, because every single player, with the exception of like a Kevin Durant, you know, LeBron James, Steph Curry, end up playing a vastly different role than what you're used to seeing on the NBA level.
Yeah.
And some guys can't handle that. Other guys flourish in that. And I'm curious to see what Fox will do, because his impact during when he was in USA basketball that year with him, Harrison Barnes, Marvin Bagley, him and Bagley were fantastic.
Yeah.
And they were very, 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 very impressive. They were able to elevate. And they look, I don't know that Bagley would have made the Olympic team. He was certainly elevated from the select team to get to the national team roster. I don't know that he would have made ultimately the national team, but those guys ascended very, very highly, and they and the likes of Popovich and Colangelo were thrilled with what they were doing until they had to bow out in LA.
Yeah. Definitely different. Like, the whole entire process there was strange. I love De'Aaron because, like, it's not that big of a deal that he's not there until he's invited. Right. And then it's a big smile. It's not that big of a deal that he hasn't made an all-star team until he makes an all-star team. It's like, yeah, I should have been in earlier. Yeah. So I do dig that part of him.
It's weird because he has such great perspective, because if he was sitting right here, and you know this as well as I do, and if anyone thinks he's looking forward to the all-star game, he doesn't. Like, he's just so indifferent to it. But as he puts it, call it legacy, call it whatever those accolades are, he feels that they take care of themselves if he just plays well and they win.
Yeah, if they win, that's right. Always been the thing. If we win, you know, I'll get all those accolades. All right, we're going to come back to the good, bad, and the ugly in the final segment of the show today. We are the Insiders on ESPN 1320. I'm James. Sean Cunningham filling in today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in just a minute.
This hour of the show is brought to you by...
Now, back to the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me, Fox 40, Sean Cunningham. Sean, how are you holding up?
I'm great. I just killed a donut that you brought. You were very nice to do. That I needed it, but I hadn't eaten anything, and I've got a lunch with some friends coming up, and thought I could make it to there, and it did not happen.
You head to Peony Palace? Is that what's happening?
I cannot confirm nor deny, but whether it's tonight or another or in the next week or so, I will definitely be there.
Okay. All right. It's a busy week in NorCal sports. Of course, the Kings face the Mavs on Saturday, and then we have the NFC Championship game on Sunday in Santa Clara. Should be pretty amazing. But let's finish up. Before we get to all that, let's finish up with the good, the bad, and the ugly. I thought Davion's minutes were solid.
Absolutely.
I felt like he walked into a couple of threes, and that was like the perfect thing to do. And I wonder if playing against Steph, and of course he worked out with Steph this summer, and he worked out with Steph this summer, really refining his three-point shot, if that didn't give him a little boost in that game.
You know what else gave him a boost? Just him being in the game.
Playing, I mean, getting on the court.
There are people who are still frustrated. In fact, I talk to him quite often. A lot of people I talk to are often very, still bring up that it's a like a blight on Mike Brown that he did not play in Game 7. And the tactic that they went to in game took basically Davion Mitchell, who was a positive force on offensive end, your best defender, and going away from him. So there are people that are still really bent over that moment. I can kind of understand it to a degree, but Davion, I mean, it trickles into the season where he let someone take his job.
Yeah.
And it was a two-way player named Keon Ellis. So a lot of the comings from, you know, pun intended, come because of his stature, mm-hmm. you know, and he has to be able to remain on the floor. And I think his confidence is high. What he brings defensively is a game changer. It just is, even on a team that's bad. And so I've always been of the opinion he needs to be in your rotation, him being out of the rotation. I understood what Mike Brown was doing. They were playing terribly. Keon Ellis comes in, plays with that spark, shows that he belongs, and then you reward it. And then they go on the 6-game win streak. Every time he plays, they win. So it was hard to find that moment to where we all knew it was coming, but it was hard to find that moment to where, all right, Keon Ellis has gone back to basically being what you expect from Keon Ellis and going back into the direction of Davion Mitchell. It's a reluctant go back to, but it also shows like kind of like the, I use the argument with the 49ers. They had their back against the wall. They saw what it looked like. They saw their season right in front of them. And so seeing Davion Mitchell react and respond that way, I also think it comes at the encouragement of some of the other players on the team in that leadership council, particularly Domas. You know, I think they want to see the presence of Davion Mitchell because he does add something defensively that they just don't have.
No, I totally agree. I think for him to step up in a moment, and again, I think it does help that it's a team that he's so familiar with, but he's still, like, there are so many times where he just doesn't seem to understand the flow of what's happening. And so I understand why Mike has gone away from him. I, too, would have gone back to him in Game 7. But even, like, you can look at the way that they, you know, they were really good in Game 1 and Game 2. Davion was really good. But Games 3, 4, 5, you know, the Kings lost, and it looked like things were slipping away. In Game 6, he turned to Terrence Davis and struck gold. And Terrence Davis was really, really good in the second half of Game 6. And he came back to that in Game 7 and didn't get the same productivity, which speaks to, like, who Terrence Davis was, number one, but also, like, something that you have to, if something does work, you can't just go away from it. Because some people are going to ask, well, why didn't you just go back to the Terrence Davis thing? It seemed to work just great last game, and you won Game 6 in Golden State and extended the series. And I think sometimes, you know, again, in the heat of the moment, there was probably a point where he should have gone back to Davion, especially in the fourth quarter, to try to slow down Steph, who had just gone crazy. And he didn't do it. And, you know, it cost that. That's one of the reasons why they lost that game. I don't know that there's anything that Davion could have done, but whatever Steph what happened with Steph is the reason why you lost the game.
I mean,
that
guy,
he went,
it was vintage performance.
Yeah, he went plaid,
and then they did go plaid.
Yeah, he
skipped Spaceballs
straight past ludicrous speed.
Yeah,
straight to plaid.
But you need to have that irritant, and he is the irritant, picking up full court. Like I can't tell you how many times I hear, especially last year, because we haven't seen Davion so much this year. But I had it relayed to me that a visiting player, talked to one of his, he's like, how many times we play, when's the next time we play Sacramento? Like, knowing what Davion Mitchell does to teams, and like, man, it's not just a regular game. It's not like a go out there, be, you know, laissez-faire. It's like, no, he's bringing it defensively every single night. And yeah, people talk about it. We mentioned it. Like, you can shoot right over him at times.
Yeah.
But it's bigger than that. You know, wearing you out, bringing it up all the way up court, picking up full court, has an impact on teams, and sometimes they're not ready to deal with stuff like that.
Yeah, he's an incredibly hard worker too. Like, people who ask me, like, from the outside, like, about Davion Mitchell, I'm like, look, I don't have any problems with Davion. I think he's a good kid. I think he's a hooper, straight up. He wants to play basketball all the time. He's also a gym rat, right, and but also a workout warrior. He's sort of a good combination of all of them. He's built like a linebacker. I don't think he's 6 foot tall.
No.
I'm not even sure that he's taller than I am. I actually don't believe that he is.
Well, you stood next to him. Have you ever tried to?
Well, yeah, but he's always got tall hair.
Does your back allow you to stand up straight like that?
Do like, one of these times, I'm going to, like, sneak over Sean while Davian's not paying attention, and I'll go back to back with him, and, like, you sit there and, like, look.
He might dunk on you.
He, like try to pat down his hair so we look like we're a similar height.
I mean, it came up in the chat here, too. I mean, like, yeah, we talked about that. Like, in preseason, and I've pointed this out before, in preseason, the dude was pushing the pace. And then you get into the season where they weren't pushing the pace as much, and it started with him. Like, it was just a bog down. He's just dribbling the ball into the
ground. They went from a 105 pace like the first 6 games to a 93 pace with him starting for 5 games. And there was nothing, you got to go a different direction. Yeah. Like, what is happening? Yeah. Why are we doing this? So let's get to a couple more things here. Malik Monk struggled. So we'll shift to the bad. Malik Monk struggled. And you know what? To be honest with you, Malik Monk has had quite a few struggle games over the last, I don't know, 2 weeks. I don't think it's a problem per se as much as it is like something that we saw last year that you could point to and go, I hope this doesn't become a trend. So over his last four games, Monk is averaging something like 9.8 points, 38.9% from the field, 25% from three. He looks like he's forcing things a little bit. Hit 5.8 assists, but 2.5 turnovers per game. And the personal fouls, he's up almost to three personal fouls a game over the last four. He's a player that I know last year it felt like he ran himself into the ground, like being the everything for this team as far as like the spiritual leader, and then had like a 6 week stretch where he couldn't shoot at all. I don't expect it to be something that that like stretched out, but what we saw last night was a player that looks mentally just not quite locked in and like a little bit of a struggle bus. And I don't mean like he's not taking the game serious or anything. I didn't mentally, he, whether it's fatigue or whatever, like the silly mistakes he was making, the, you know, like there comes a point where he starts dribbling and dribbles the ball right off his foot and it's got to go pick it up. And you just felt like he's not as crisp as he has been.
Yeah, I just chalk it up to one game. You know, I think very early on, I think the three turnovers were really bad. And I think there might have been a belief that all right, we don't need turnovers tonight. Like we don't need that type of play tonight. We need the easy setup pass. But I think also other guys just had it going. And
no, that's true.
And really, I like Malik plays such a vital role. Like he'll bounce back. I think he'll probably have a really good game in Dallas. But I think some of the times where he starts to feel himself a little bit too much, you see those passes where he's really lobbing the ball out here like this and doing one of those like lunge passes.
Yeah, getting a little too fancy.
Yeah, and it's fine. Look, they feed off of that. It's a little bit of like the Deebo Samuel thing. Like he means so much to them that his personality is tattooed on their identity. So yeah, I think it's just one bad game and just other guys had it going. And the crazy part is, I know he played under 20 minutes, but if they needed him down the stretch and Kevin wasn't as impactful as he was, especially on the boards, and
yeah.
I know he missed the two free throws, but Kevin Herter was pretty good. And if they had gone back to Malik, I think he would have had some pretty memorable plays to the positive to close out that game, because that's kind of what he does. They just didn't have the need to go back to him, which was nice. You know, hopefully you don't have to rely on that every single night.
Yeah, I would point that out. Like, you don't have to rely on him every single night. One of the other things that I think is kind of missing here is that Trey Lyles played a small ball five.
Right.
And that takes away the lob threat and the pick and roll threat that Monk likes to flourish in. And I think he struggled to figure that one out. And I'd also say, like, Trey Lyles had 8 points. You know, he hit a couple of threes, but zero rebounds. And if you're going to go small, Trey has got to go rebound. And so that's under my bad. Under the ugly, we've got the two crucial missed free throws by Kevin Herter. And like I think it's interesting because as he's like stepping to the line to shoot them, you know, they're talking about on the telecast how he's an 80% free throw shooter. And I'm thinking, wait a sec, Kevin Herter is an 80% free throw shooter? Because that throughout his career, he has not been a great free throw shooter. But sure enough,
especially his time in Sacramento.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's really struggled. So last year he shot 72.5 for the Kings. This year he's at 77.8, and that's counting in the two misses. And I know it seems like, oh, well, two misses shouldn't drop his thing by his percentage and drop him below 80. But trust me, when you shoot as few free throws as Kevin Herter typically does, then yes, it can have that kind of impact. But like they got to get better in those situations. And I know nobody wants to miss free throws, but they lost two games in that four game losing streak that you could just circle and say they lost because they missed free throws.
Yep.
I mean, they lost to Milwaukee because Malik Monk missed two at 18 seconds left and Fox missed one in the final seconds. And then they go, 18 of 32 in the loss to, was it Phoenix? And those are just things that, like, if you're going to do that, you're going to lose games. Oh, that was a game when they got home. It wasn't the Phoenix game.
Well, it's wild. I mean, it's what this team is. Remember Game 7?
Yeah.
And I don't even mean Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals back in the early 2000s where they missed free throws. Like, this is who they are. And Mike Brown scratches his head every day because he's like, I've got good shooters. I don't have good free throw shooters.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I post a video the other day.
All the time. Yeah.
Of De'Aaron Fox hitting, like, 25 straight free throws. Boom, 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 boom. Gets into a game, brick right away. You're like, man, what happened? So I don't know if it's like a little bit of, you know, just like mental.
Well, when you're practicing free throws,
yeah,
and you're different. Not running up and down the floor,
and there's not 18,000 people.
Right. Yeah. There's no pressure situation. Sure. Yeah.
It's like you know free cookies aren't on the line.
No, you know what it is, James? It's you at the driving range, especially if you're hitting off a mat.
Yeah.
Because the mat is so much more forgiving than the ground is. You know, you can ground a club and it's like, oh, I got the mat. It's still going to hit it fine.
Yep.
You know, that's why you don't go to the range and take that. It's like, okay, how do you take that? You get on the course and you're in the rough. And you've got sticks around you?
Yeah.
Now hit it.
You're off camber, no. All those things. No, right. That's true. Yeah, it's very true. Last thing for the ugly, they gave up 133 points in regulation. Sean, that to me, though, it just felt like great offense. Like, that was a heavyweight fight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly what we came accustomed to seeing in the postseason.
Yeah.
It's good to see the Kings kind of have that side to them because, I mean, look, they put up points, but to have that many threes, I mean, they shot 48 threes, James.
Mm.
And at no point did I think, okay, they're solely relying on the three. It's like, no, everything's dropping.
No. Yeah, 22 of 48. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Do we have a guest?
Sean Cunningham is here!
There we are. The Damian Barling.
Absolutely.
Is logging into a computer. This weekend, we have Kings versus Mavs on Saturday. I don't know if Kyrie's going to play or not. He's been day-to-day with a thumb issue. He did not play last game. But this is a team that the Kings handled pretty decidedly earlier in the season, and that was with Kyrie and Luka both having solid games.
Yeah, but Kyrie's balling right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really good. I mean, if we were ever getting into our – I don't think we're going to do it now, but, like, if we had gotten to our picking our reserves.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll have to have a Kings Beat podcast and do that.
I mean, how do you leave him off?
I don't know. It's going to be tough.
It was interesting seeing what the sub or like what the reserves looked like on TNT last night because it was only Charles that had both Fox and Domas in the All-Star game.
If you think one of them will make it and one of them won't, who's out?
Fox would be out. But here's why. Because he's a front court player. He's a true center technically. I mean, the way a lot of coaches look at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think coaches are going to look to that and say, all right, yeah, he's got to be there. I think it's just so hard in the West for guards. But also, Devin Booker got hurt last year and wasn't able to play. So I think they're going to reward him, you know. And okay. I still think there's a pathway for Fox to get in, don't get me wrong. But if you had to pick one over the other, I think it's going to be Domas.
Okay. That's tough.
Look who it is.
There he is.
Look.
Hey.
I'm so happy you're here, man.
Oh.
I love when you're here. I'm dead serious.
Really?
Oh, hell, man, you... Sean is that dude. Like, I'm so happy Sean Cunningham comes in here. Like, man, you are that dude. Man, it's dope when you're in here with us.
Thanks, man.
I love it. You got this guy, gets Jerry Reynolds, Jake, all the local legends, Jake Gayden, Sean Cunningham. Like, man, it's a big deal.
Legends.
I love it. Yeah, it's come on the podcast, too. Like, it's just the two of us.
Just a wealth of dry information. No, like top analysis of anything. Just delivers the news.
Yeah, man. Like, can't be too knee jerk in this business, right?
No, I got you.
It's like talking about Harrison Barnes today. All of a sudden, people are going to be like, "Oh, this is Harrison Barnes. He
Max Pack, baby.
We don't need to trade him." No, come on, man. Like,
is that funny? Like, did he just make his case to stay? He's like, "Hey, look, this is who I can be. If that's who you want me to be, I'll be that."
I don't know what to make of any of it. Like Mike said yesterday, he drew more plays up for Harrison last night than he has the whole season. And it's like, why?
And if that's the case, don't say it out loud.
Yeah. Like,
sometimes it's about winning.
So at some point, like he I guess, cause according to everybody, the Atlanta game was just in the flow of everything. It was there. He did it. It was all completely normal. And then I guess at some point last night, Mike realized, hey, this dude's on a run here for like two games. Let's draw up plays for him. Like, I love Mike. Mike is hilarious. I knew Mike was
fine. He's got jobs too, right?
I knew Mike.
Sitting in the post-game press conferences asking questions.
I knew Mike was funny when he played Chris Duarte in the first half. Oh, didn't play him in the second half and played Kessler Edwards instead.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was we've seen that though.
That's why De'Aaron laughed at him when one of you guys asked, is that the rotation? Is that what the rotation looks like? And De'Aaron goes, I don't know.
What rotation?
I don't know.
De'Aaron's like, I know I play 36 minutes.
Yeah.
After that, I'm actually not even paying attention. I'm just hanging out on the bench, like wondering when I'm going back in the game. Yeah. We've got NFC Championship game this weekend. I know Sean will be there. Our friend Kyle will be there. He's going to fly in and go to the NFC Championship game. What do you guys got? What do you think?
Well, if I like I said, the Lions are the team. If I'm the Niners, I didn't want to play. But you've been here before. Like,
how come? What is it about the Lions?
They're so similar to you, especially on the offensive end. Mm. Defensively, yeah, you're good at stopping the run. I mean, that's fantastic. But I still think, look, this 49er team is an all-star team. And they're absolutely constructed to win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I think it's great that they had a moment of what I like to call pucker factor. You had your back against the wall. You were looking dead into the offseason.
What exactly puckered, Sean?
Well, I'll leave that to the imagination. But, yeah, having Trent Williams go in there and fire their team up and say, hey, guys, this is it.
Yeah.
I think it's good to have that scare for them. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to handle business. I really do. I think, you know, you have a team that sometimes this is dangerous, that doesn't necessarily feel that there might be some that feel that they shouldn't be there in terms of the Lions and what they've been able to accomplish. I don't want to take away from them, but like, they haven't had this stage before. Mm-hmm. The Niners have two NFC championships straight in the past 3 years where they've lost and they've had that bitter taste. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to rely on not only their talent, but just the experience overall. And I think the plate is set for them. I mean, they should be able to take advantage of this. And if it's another exit in the NFC championship, oh boy.
It's tough. Yeah.
Oh boy.
It's a tough look. Yeah.
What's your final score?
Oh, we're doing that?
Yeah.
I'll play along. Let's just go 34-28 49ers.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not playing along with that. I hate that. But
I don't like that either. I feel like I had a gun in my head.
I don't know because there is a gun. I have a gun right here in the studio. I've gone full John Morant on you.
I love the... Now, that's not nice. Come on, James. James, flag, like, come on, Hammer.
Yes.
I 100% agree with what Sean said. I hadn't used the term pucker factor before, but like, I think the fact that they got rattled a little bit, they did get pushed around, like they got roped into, you know, some things, some skirmishes, some different things that they needed to be involved in. They played against the team who was playing with their chest out. They looked a little slow. They looked a little uncomposed going into that game. And none of that stuff, I think, is going to happen again.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that the Lions can't still win. I think the Lions do deserve to be here. They've been one of the better teams in the NFC all year long. They haven't been a team that I've particularly loved this year. But I do love this matchup. I just think with that game playing out the way that it did, I thought that was super important for San Francisco. And this is a game that I feel like they'd be far more locked in. I think this is going to be a completely different type of game than what we saw on Saturday. I do think the 49ers win. I do think it's close. But I think it might come down to Brock Purdy and Jared Goff. And that's not exactly a revolutionary statement on my part saying it comes down to the quarterbacks. But will Jared Goff make a mistake in that moment? The truth is, I don't think he will. Mm. Will the 49ers force him into making a mistake? That's different. Unforced errors versus a 49ers defensive stand are two different things.
Okay.
Total turnovers, how many do you think? I don't think there's going to be many.
I'd say three is tops. I'd cap it at one apiece.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, there could always be a special teams one. All right. We're out of here early today. We got to bail. So, Sean, thanks for coming in.
Anytime, guys.
It's been great.
Good to see you.
Legend.
Oh, that's garbage.
I love Sean Cunningham.
I'm going to say real quick.
Dead serious.
31-29ers. 33-29ers. That's where I'm going.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in to the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. We will be back next week with Kyle Madsen.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.